Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. If you'd like to find more sessions, interviews, and story podcasts, visit our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. This podcast features a program session from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
Okay, I think we're going to get started here with this session. You are at Top 10 Questions to Consider When Implementing Social Media, Perspectives from Different Campuses. And we have three different campuses to offer you their perspectives today. And let me introduce them. We've got Tanya Jostin right here, Interim Associate Director of the Learning Technology Center at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. A.J. Kelton, Director, Emerging Instructional Technology in the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Montclair State University. And right here, Shannon Ritter, Coordinator of Auditions, Interviews, and Admissions in the School of Theater at the Pennsylvania State University. And I will let you guys get started.
All right. Thank you. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us this morning. This panel actually started last year at EDUCAUSE. We had participated in a social networking discussion, and we felt that a lot of campuses, this room is really packed. A lot of campuses were sort of in the infant stages in understanding how to strategically implement this on campus and so forth. And so we thought by bringing you multiple perspectives, not only from different campuses, but also dealing with different issues from teaching and learning to community building among students and so forth in regards to social media. So what we've done is we've identified 10 questions that we're going to go through. And the first, in order to get a better take on those. And what we're hoping at the end then is to have some time for you guys to pose your questions or share your stories. But I'm not sure if we're going to have time for that. But we'll try. So the first question is, how do you define social media? And this is a very interesting one because there's lots of people are sort of making up definitions or trying to figure out exactly what it is and what it's not, per se. And so yesterday, Shannon and I had a pre-conference workshop on social media, and this is a question that we actually posed to our group, our workshop participants, and they actually tweeted in under 140 characters, including our hashtag, EDU Social Media, what they felt social media was. And so you can see some of those highlighted on the screen above. And so a really nice one by John Dolan from Penn State is that it's a channel that allows for instant, unfiltered conversation, collaboration, and community. And those are really some keys when we're talking about social media. Is that it is a collaboration, and it is unfiltered, and it's community building in its own nature. And so AJ and I have really grown to, like, from the Journal of Computer-Mediated Communication, this definition by Boyd and Ellison, which is a couple years old. But it points out some key things that make social media different from other communication technologies that are out there, in that it's the users have a profile. So there needs to be some information about you that you're sharing publicly with the rest of the world. The next thing is that you are going to be sharing a connection. So you need to be able to formally build a connection, whether that's friending them, following them. And this is really key in ruling out some technologies that could be social media, but maybe aren't being used in that way. For example, blogs. If you're not having a profile and you're not building connections, then blogging isn't a social media in that use. The other one is that you're sharing a list of your connections so that you can publicly see who's following you, who's your friend, and those sorts of things. So in the research that AJ and I are publishing and studies that we're working on, we're really sticking to the Boyd and Ellison definition here from the JCMC. And the article is public. If you just go to the JCMC website, you can pull up the article and read the study that they did in 07 and better understand their defining that construct for us.
Dana Boyd, D-A-N-A-H.
As we go through, I just wanted to encourage everyone to use that hashtag now in this session. It's EDU SOC Media. We really want to keep that conversation going. So if you have questions as we're going through, post them and use that hashtag. It's really becoming quite a resource based on conversations that we had prior to EDUCAUSE, based on our pre-conference seminar yesterday. If you go to YouTube and search for that hashtag now, we're trying to build a lot of videos there with people talking about social media, how they're using these things on their campus, what are the challenges. So please use the hashtag today and help us build that resource.
And we have some motivation. So for those of you who tweet the most during this session, we have some swag for you that we'll be giving out at the end of the session, thanks to TechSmith. And so get those tweets going. We actually had 192 tweets from our pre-conference workshop yesterday, and it's really showing how you can construct knowledge and share that with the world through microblogging using something like Twitter. And so make sure to check out that hashtag when you leave here as well.
And if you want to share your own answers to these questions, share them through the hashtag.
Absolutely.
Then it's not just three perspectives, it's hundreds of perspectives.
Yeah.
So question number two, how is your campus implementing the use of social media? From my perspective at Penn State is a very large institution, and we have campuses all over the state and our online campus. So everyone is implementing it a little bit differently, and I think that is exactly how it should be. There's been a lot of talk recently about trying to get control over the message and trying to have these centralized resources. these centralized resources that will kind of control everyone and manage everything. And to, in my opinion, to have social media work the way it should work, you just can't do it that way. It has to be one faculty member here and one campus here and one department here to really make it feel like it's real and authentic and genuine. The second you start to control that message, you really take away the authenticity of social media, and that's what it's all about.
So, it can't be social if we're trying to control it and tell people how to communicate with it. So we need to be careful when we talk about control.
Right, and it's a genie out of the bottle. I mean, there's been discussion about how do you shove this genie back or the toothpaste back into the tube, whatever you want. But that's not going to happen. Now, can an institution control the message that their communications department is putting out about what reflects specifically on the administration of the university? Well, of course, they can set down guidelines and policies for doing that. But I think any attempt to try and curtail the activities of individual faculty members in their teaching, individual student organizations, other organizations around campus. Guidelines are fine. I think that's important. I think it's very important.
Best practices.
Right, best practices, exactly. But to try and say, well, we're going to stop it or we're going to completely control it, it's like trying to grab hold of sand. You know, it's just it's bad. It's bad policy on top of everything.
Great metaphor. AJ, do you want to talk a little bit about how social media is being used at Montclair?
Yeah, just to start by saying that I work for one academic unit, so my perspective is from that. But what I see the university using, it's been done in drips and drabs, probably the way most of your own institutions have. Our food services is trying to do it to reach out to the students. Our radio station is using it. We have a Facebook presence, and there hasn't been an awful lot of success with that. And I think it's because it's being treated, and this, I'm not faulting Montclair because this is new for a lot of people, and it's a matter of having someone who's more experienced in using this particular type of media. We've just hired somebody to do that. I'm sure we're going to start to see the Facebook and Twitter accounts being used more effectively. But for me, the exciting thing is how faculty are using it. We have a faculty member who teaches an Italian language class, and she not only has her students tweet in Italian with each other, but she's connected them with native language speakers in Italy, and they tweet with each other. So that's real rich learning, and it's real world learning.
Right. Like at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, like Shannon, oh gosh, I'm doing it again. I consistently call Shannon Sharon because there's lots of Sharons in my office. Like Shannon and AJ at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, we have a lot of the grassroots initiatives too. So lots of units are developing Facebook fan pages. Lots of different individuals are using it to develop themselves professionally and be the smart kid in class. Because you have, access to an information source like Twitter. But what we did in the spring is, with the University of Wisconsin System Emerging Technology Grant, we actually had 12 course sections roll out social media in order to impact various social variables and especially impact student learning and performance in the class. And so in an array of disciplines, from Jewish studies to the biological science and so forth, we had faculty create course Twitter pages and create course fan pages to push out announcements and communication to the students. And what ended up happening is, although it seemed like a very superficial use, we had a great impact, 97% satisfaction from students. And social media did what social media is supposed to do. It became social. So faculty were able to pull in stuff in the real world and the outside into those discussions on the Facebook fan page wall. We were communicating with students where they live, and it ended up creating all sorts of impact on social variables like presence and engagement and connectedness that we didn't know with that sort of use would happen, and they did, and the results were really fantastic.
Next question, what are the costs associated with implementing the use of social media for everyone? AJ, you want to talk?
Yeah, sure. I think the probably the biggest cost, because, I mean, social media doesn't cost anything in and of itself to use. There's no fee to use Facebook or Twitter. I think the biggest cost is the time it takes to learn how to do it properly.
Right.
And that, in some ways, speaks to learning the culture of I mean, the culture of Facebook is very different than the culture of Twitter and any of the other, you know, Foursquare, any of the other social applications that are out there. So I think probably the most important time, the most important thing is time and that time commitment. And that's really, for me, that's hard to teach. I guess that's another question. I'll get to that in a second.
And a couple things here about cost. You know, the reason that we're using social media tools like Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and so forth, there is strategic reasons because it is free and we're in a time where economically, I'm not getting a lot of money to buy hardware and software on our campus. So this is great that we can help increase certain social variables in the classroom and impact student learning using products that students are possibly already using. There is a cost, though, for us, because I'm on the pedagogical side of it. I teach as well as help other faculty use technology, and that comes in training. And what we found, actually, is with our project that we set up for using Facebook and Twitter, it's a 90-minute training session so far with 100% success. So we help them set up a fan page. We help them set up a Twitter course page. We link them together using RSS graffiti so it's easier for the faculty. We put it in the Desire to Learn nav bar, which is customizable, so it's easily accessible for students. And, again, we do this in 90 minutes with faculty, and it's working out really well. So really quick, too, as AJ said, this is a different culture. So it took me a year of being in Twitter and in Facebook to really understand the potential in that culture before I could strategically plan anything on my campus. And there are no experts. There are no social media gurus. You just need users who understand it, and then you can help better plan those initiatives on your campus.
And I think just to go off what Tanya said there, she's working with faculty. If you're coming from a departmental perspective, like my perspective in the School of Theater, trying to use these tools to reach out to prospective students, to improve engagement, to improve retention, there are very likely people in your departments already very invested in social media personally. So look to those people. Those people are passionate about what they do. They would love to do this for your department or your office or whatever you want to use. So look for the people that are already using it.
Absolutely.
And let them use it and trust that they know what they're doing.
And like
you don't have to hire someone else to do it. Someone is already doing it in your department.
And like we heard this morning in the general session, is find the innovators on your campus. And they might not be, you know, faculty or the expected sort of people. Maybe they're people down in the front lines that you can bring in and help you better understand this and plan for it. Look for those innovators. So the next question is, what can students, instructors, and administrators do with social media? And Robin joins us here today, up here in the front, who helped us put this together. So, Shannon, do you want to start off on that one?
I really think that this one is tricky because you can really do whatever you'd like to. And every single person will have a different reason for using social media, but you need to come up with a reason first. Don't just jump in and start using it.
Right.
Know what your goal is to begin with, And then you'll see a few slides from now how to evaluate that. But you can't evaluate anything if you don't start with a goal. So, you know, your reason for using social media will be completely different from mine, will be completely different from Robin's, will be different from everyone else.
Absolutely.
And your goals will be different. So
right.
You can't, that's exactly why Tanya said,
absolutely,
there are no social media experts. There are no gurus. And anyone that tells you that they are is lying to you.
Liars.
We're all liars. We're all very new with this. And everyone's reason is a little bit different. So sessions like this allow you to see a different perspective and learn from each other and then decide what would work for you or how you could switch something just a little bit to make it work for your department. So we're using it to reach out to prospective students to share what the School of Theater is doing to get people to come to our performances. It's very different from the job I was doing 2 months ago where I was working for the online campus and trying to reach out to distance students to build community. So still using social media, but now in a very different way.
And just to take off on what she said just a little bit, is that really what you're looking at is there are three different areas in which this is used, right? The administration, the students, and teaching and learning. I mean, there are certainly other more granular uses. So keep in mind the goal, right? And from an academic perspective, what I always tell the faculty is make sure that you're putting the pedagogy ahead of the technology. That's essentially important. That the technology should never drive the pedagogy. It absolutely has to be the other way around. And that's why I think it's important for those of you out there who are educators in the classroom who are using social media, write about what you're doing, publish what you're doing, submit it to EDUCAUSE, submit it to places. Let us all share. That's what makes it social also. Let us all share in what you're doing.
And one thing, too, at UWM, you know, this sort of came around because I was teaching fully online in the Department of Communication, and I actually teach communication technology, but I was feeling that I wasn't building presence with my students, that we weren't feeling connected. And I actually surveyed my students, and 90% of them were saying that they needed to feel connected in order to learn. And right now, we don't have a way to push down communication except with email, and email doesn't work because students don't use it. And so I wanted to build that connection with my students using some sort of media that they were using, like Facebook and Twitter. And so I had a pedagogical need that I was trying to fill when I started researching social media. I wasn't just out there because it was cool, although that always helps. And the fact that the whole world is in there helps as well. With training and learning curve. But you need to figure out why you are going to use this. What is your pedagogical need on your campus, in your class, and so forth, that you are going to implement social media in order to meet that? On a funny note, I know some of you right now are editing your profiles to remove the fact that you're saying you're a social media guru or social media expert.
We're watching.
Yeah. All right, so the fifth one is how do we teach students and faculty to use social media appropriately, and how long does it take? And it was interesting, we had, I don't know how this question came up, but I was writing, we had a wiki we were collaborating on for this, and I was like, why are we using the word appropriately?
Right.
And how do we even define what is appropriate use? Because I know right now in this room we probably have 20 different ideas about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And there may be some age divisions there as well.
Right. Yeah, I don't. Going back to the idea of it being a culture, I don't think you can teach people how to use these tools. I think that you can show them, you can model, right? You can show them by example. You can say, "This is how I use it," or "This is," you know, are there instructions on how to use Facebook? Certainly, there are things about Facebook that you need to learn. I mean, I can teach you that. I can sit down and show you this is what a group is. Here's how you set up a group. But that's not teaching. That's teaching you the mechanics. That's not really teaching you how to use it as a tool. You know, a hammer, it's fairly easy to understand how to use it, but unless you learn some basic, you know, science, you're going to clobber your thumb, right? So it's the same idea.
And some of these things overlap our current paradigm of when we think about communication and we think about our class. So, for example, social media is social. So one of our best practices with faculty is to keep it open. Don't lock it down.
Right.
Everybody wants to lock it down, lock down their tweets, or they don't want to use a Facebook fan page because it's public. But the whole point of social media is because it's open. Other people can see what you're doing. So, for example, our Jewish studies program, we had one course, a 100-level Jewish studies course, use it. Now it ends up that they've now because it was an open fan page, other students started seeing it and joining the fan page, following the course posts, and now they've actually increased the enrollments in their Jewish study classes because now people found out Jewish studies is really cool and that they're posting, you know, South Park videos on the wall in order to explore some of these issues. Now there's a Jewish studies fan page for majors and minors and a Jewish study fan page for whatever, and you can find this on Facebook. Just search UWM Jewish, and a lot of this stuff will come up. And so don't try to, or when you're teaching faculty, you need to deal with some of those paradigms of wanting to lock it down. If you want it locked down, put it in the course management system.
Right. That's right.
And just to point out, all of the slides in this presentation were gathered, all of the photos, through the use of Twitter. So I just tweeted, I need people to hold up a giant piece of paper and send me that photo so I can put the questions on there. So it was all put together with that.
And these people rock. They're awesome.
They do rock. Yes, they do.
Yes, they do, especially the ones that are here in the room today.
I love this question, and I love their smiles, too. They like using social media, you can tell. I think, do students like to use it? Absolutely, they like to use it. If you take a look at Facebook, they're all over it. And Tanya and I talked yesterday, too, about this whole idea that teens don't tweet, and I completely disagree with that.
Me too.
Maybe college students don't tweet as much as they Facebook, but if you do a search for your institution on Twitter and you're sending out acceptance notifications, take a look at all of those teens tweeting about coming to your university and how excited they are. Okay. Teens do tweet. High school students seem, in my opinion, to tweet a little bit more than college students.
Right.
But yeah, absolutely they like it.
And the thing about social media is it's changing so fast. You know, I did a study in my class in 08 on teens tweeting. And you know what? None of my students were Twittering whatsoever, tweeting whatever the words are, but they were all using Facebook. And so, however, just in 2 years, that's changing. I'm connecting with lots of the teens in my life now via Twitter, and they're responding to having lunch with me yesterday, a matter of fact. So, you know, this is really transforming. And so if we try to put your hands on it, we just have to be more fluid in our paradigm and how we think about these things. But to bring in some actual data in it, you know, we did, you know, have a survey that we submitted and so forth, and we got some information back. And I've done lots of emerging technology projects. I've done clickers and podcasting and so forth. And again, I've never seen neutral, agree, and strongly agree add up to 97% satisfaction.
Great.
97%. I'm really happy if I'm over 50%, 60%, you know, I'm getting excited. I mean, 97%. I mean, the students obviously like it. And, you know, there was an NMC discussion real quick to rattle on here. And people were trying to say, oh, yeah, students don't want us in their Facebook. Students don't want this. Show me the data that students don't want you to push down information to them. They might not want you to be their friend and see what they did on Friday night. I don't want you to be my friend, maybe, and see what I did on Friday night. But they definitely want information to come to them in the places they live. They want to feel connected to their instructor and their peers, and I have the data to show that. So before we make these assumptions about students, talk to them. Talk to the students on your campus. Talk to the people in students affairs. Reach out over Twitter and find those people, like I just recently did. Before you jump to conclusions and make decisions, we're in a time that we need data-driven decisions. So go out and get the data. Post on your Facebook wall, you know. Ask the teens in your life what they're doing.
Well, and I think that the answer to the question is yes, that they like doing it because they're doing it. Now, educationally, whether they want to be doing it in their classroom, I think Tanya brings up a good point, is that you really need to evaluate that. And this brings
strategic.
Up, right, it needs to be strategic. And this brings up something that if you can Google this or Wikipedia, it's called Creepy Treehouse, and it's a phenomenon where the students don't want you in their domain. But really, over time, just like words do, it sort of changed to the respect that what Tanya just said is that I don't want the students to be my friends. I don't want to be their friends. I really don't want to know what they're doing. But there's nothing to stop us from creating a group where we have a shared space, because the key thing here is that they do want to feel connected. They do want to feel like they're part of something, like they're part of a group. And these tools, and that's what they are, they're tools. And when used properly, they're effective tools. right? So they're more than willing to use the tool as long as it's not invading their space. And I think we all feel the same way. I don't think that many of us who are in larger units would want our supervisors necessarily following what we do on the weekend. You know, it's
I do. I do. I'm open.
I don't.
Off of that too, you know, we use Twitter for our pilot that we're doing as a way for students to get information down to their mobile devices via text messaging. That's the way we've planned it strategically. So the students follow the course tweets. They choose to get the mobile updates because, you know, from my studies, we know that students have mobile devices. And what's changed from 5 years ago? 5 years ago, they didn't want us to be in their mobile devices. Now, you know, over 70% of my students said they want to get text updates about the class. So, and this is a great way to do that via Twitter. It's opt-in, they subscribe, and so forth. And one of, just another quick thing on faculty liking social media. Rachel Baum, who is in our Jewish Studies program, as well as Sue Stileski and other folks, did put up YouTube videos talking about their use and how enthusiastic they are. And they are on YouTube under the EDU social media tag, so check those out when you get a chance. And you can use them in persuading your own campus and sharing the story. Great way how YouTube is social as well.
I think a part of what the discussion that you and I just had about bosses and stuff like that speaks to the very next question about privacy. So we'll get – is that the next question?
Yep.
Okay. It is the next question. Good. I don't have my glasses on. So
the question is, what concerns should we have about privacy and our use of social media? And this is one I hear all the time. I don't understand it, and things are open, so let's not use it, or let's try to control it. And so here's an example that I'm pretty open and about what I do and so forth on Twitter and Facebook, and I'll accept anybody as my friend. I'm lonely. No, I'm just kidding. And AJ, on the other hand, you know, is very selective about what he posts socially. However, we did I did help him out remodeling his house and figuring out what kind of wood was on his floors.
Yes, absolutely.
So if he wouldn't have tweeted that, he would have been stuck.
I definitely define a difference between when I post stuff to Twitter and to Twitter specifically, I generally try and not what they used to call life blogging or life posting, where I'm doing personal stuff. It's mostly work related because a lot of the people who follow me, that's what they're looking for. Now, Facebook was a different issue because Facebook, I started out for work. But then all my high school friends and people in high school found me. And then my family members started, you know. So I had to sort of change a little bit. But it's interesting that you should bring that up. I had an interesting encounter that recently that made me think about this issue of privacy. And I think we do need to think about it because the people who own these applications don't care about you. They care about your data and what they can do with it. And Facebook is an excellent example of that. And I'm not saying that to scare you. What I'm saying is be cautious. Be cognizant of what you're putting up there and know that there is no privacy. And if you don't want to see it on the cover of the New York Times, don't put it on the internet, period.
And if we're going to be spending time developing things on our campus, that's what we need to be spending times developing. It's just letting students and faculty understand so that they're making informed decisions about, you know, as we said yesterday in the workshop, what's on the internet stays on the internet.
Even if you take it down.
Julia tweeted that, and that was really fantastic. Yeah, even if you take it down.
Because they back these servers up.
Yeah. And making choices about privacy settings and those sorts of things. But also there is a perception that not a lot is private anymore and so forth. And so you need to have these discussions on your campus. You need to figure out how you're going to educate folks on the best practices about privacy so that they can make informed decisions about what to put out there and so forth. One other...
Good segue into the next question.
Oh. Speaking of...
best practices.
One other thing I just want to talk about privacy before we get to best practices, and this sort of ties in, is that's why we came up with the fan page, because that way you don't have 25 students trying to be your friends so that you can talk. You could just push information down to your students via the fan page. They're fanning the page. They're not fanning you per se. Same thing with Twitter. So you can still have your personal Facebook, which is still secure, that only your friends, family, and everybody you went to elementary school with can see. And the same thing with Twitter. You can still decide, you know, those sorts of things whether you want your personal things locked down and so forth.
Can we stay on this for 1 second?
Yeah,
just very quickly, I use a service called Ping, ping.fm. I use it because I have many social networks because faculty come to me and say, well, what about this? What about that? And I wanted to experience them so I could tell them what's the difference between, you know, Twitter and Jaiku and all these others. And so in order to get my, not have to update all of them, I use Ping. So I was posting stuff, as Tanya said, about this new house that I just bought and renovating it. And I got an email from somebody and they said, oh, I have this great idea for an application. You know, you could put your information about your house in there, and when you're all done, you could give it to the new owner, and they know who was doing your boiler and who painted your house, blah, blah, blah. And I wrote, and we should write this application. And I wrote back to this person. I said, yeah, that's a great idea. And who are you? And how did you know about what was going on? Oh, I follow you on Twitter. And he knew me through a list. And it made me realize that I wasn't being cautious. I mean, it speaks exactly to what Tanya just said about you need to be selective about where you put something. In one application, you can focus. You can say this is one of the things Facebook does do well is it allows you a certain degree of granularity. You know, so to be able to say, well, I only want my family and my friends to be able to see my photos. All right. That's very important to understand. Understand this goes back to culture. Understand the culture and develop your own set of best practices.
Yeah. And one of the things, that always comes up too is that we talk about Facebook is stealing our information. We're just marketing people, those sorts of things. You know, people have been stealing our information for years and years.
True.
You know, like Google Desktop and Windows and so forth. And students are already in Facebook, so you need to have those conversations on your campus about to what degree is it your responsibility to inform students about these things. They're already there. They're already having their information sucked up. But that's sort of an age. Anything we do on the Internet right now, people are collecting data on it from places that many times we don't even know exist. So those are discussions you have to have on your campus. But I don't think we should avoid it because we don't understand it or it frightens us. Take some time to get in there, become a part of the culture, and understand it. And definitely understand it before you're trying to administer anything on your campus with it.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, I see a lot of times that people start these initiatives and they're not living in it themselves. They don't understand the culture. And so it's really important that you do that.
I just wanted to talk about what AJ said and how AJ uses Ping to cross-post to a lot of networks and go back to what I said earlier about how every single person will use something a little bit differently and have a different goal. I don't use any cross-posting because I don't like that. I feel like the Facebook audience is much different than the Twitter audience, and I will tell you that some organizations, yeah, some academic departments on our campus as well as other places, you can cross-post to Twitter from Facebook. And what I'm noticing is that more and more people are doing that in the idea that it saves me time. I can just post one place and it goes everywhere. But you need to realize,
absolutely,
that you can alienate your audiences,
right,
by doing that. So it's happened to me. If I see someone that I'm following on Twitter and they say, hey, Facebook friends,
yeah,
check out this link. Well, I'm not your Facebook friend. I'm your,
yeah,
Twitter friend, and you should know that.
And
so, it, you know,
yeah,
you have you have to really watch what, yeah, you're doing. I get the idea that it'll save you time because it does take time.
Right.
It takes time to be real and authentic and genuine in every separate network.
Right.
But you have to be really cautious because if you alienate one person, how does that affect?
And it's communication 101. Know your audience.
Right, audience. That's absolutely right.
You definitely have different audiences and different platforms. Selective tweets. David Middleton introduced me to that, where there might be tweets that it is appropriate for both audiences. So I've used that app. You just put a hashtag FB, and then it posts to my Facebook as well. But not all tweets are for both audiences.
Right. And to speak to that, I agree with it may sound strange for you to hear me say this, but I agree with what Shannon says, keeping in mind that the reason I do that is because my audience is the same. The people who I've developed in my Facebook audience, with the exception of the high school friends and a few family who I really hadn't intended on being in my Facebook network anyway, it's mostly work related. So the folks that I'm appealing to, it's the same thing. Just a funny one-line anecdote about that. I have a cousin who's on Facebook who I wouldn't normally have kept in touch with, but I can now. She wrote back to me on my birthday. She said, happy birthday. I'd post to you more often, but I usually have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. I get the same thing. Like, they have no clue. A friend of mine who lives in Seattle, actually, her husband works for Microsoft. She's like, I love looking at your posts because every day I know I have something to look up in the dictionary. And so just when we talk about best practices, there's just five of them we have for faculty at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Use it often, because if you're going to use it as an instructor and you're not going to use it a couple times a week, then forget it. Because they're not going to pay attention to it. If you're not using it and make it important, they're not going to think it's important. Keep it simple. It's great for faculty because we are used to sending out these five-paragraph emails, and we get to the point at the end of the fifth paragraph, and the students only read the first sentence. And Twitter helps you focus that because it's 140 characters. Also, just keep your use simple. Create a fan page or create a Twitter page for your course. Start there. Start really understanding it. Don't try to do, hashtag following and 10 different ways to use Twitter all at once when you start using it in your class. Start with a really simple thing. Keep it open. It's social. It's community building. That's the whole point of it. Locking down all of your information is not the way to go. If it's something that you're worried about FERPA or being on the internet, then put it in the course management system. That's why there's a username and password. And I don't view it as an alternative to the course management system whatsoever. But you're trying to build community, transcending the walls of your course, so to speak.
A couple of things that I would say is understand that what you put out there, this is a best practice for anything, understand that what you put out there stays out there. The other thing goes back to an academic thing, and that is, I said it earlier, is that consider the pedagogy. Whatever it is you're using it for in your classroom, make sure it's the right tool.
Absolutely. All right, so how do I, what?
You tackle this one.
Yeah, I'll tackle this one. I'm also a researcher at heart. So how do I evaluate the impact of social media? We talked about this yesterday, too, in our pre-conference workshop, and we had some really great ideas. But the point is think back, first of all, why are you using social media? Why are you using it in the first place? And then start thinking about how you're going to evaluate that. But the main point here is evaluate it, period. We use so many things on our campuses these days, whether it's, a pedagogy or whether it's a technology, and we're not even evaluating the impact, but yet we still fund them and we have more human and software resources and we're just not evaluating them. I do have a wiki, mysurveys.wikispaces.com, that I share all of the instruments that I've developed. All of them are reliable, over 0.9. And also the UWM social media wiki, uwmsocialmedia.wikispaces.com, has the pre- and post-evaluation that we used, looking at several social variables such as presence, engagement, learning community, and so forth, as well as outcome variables, learning, and performance. Please use it, share it, and so forth. Evaluation can be so simple as asking students, what's one thing you really liked about it, because they have to narrow it down, and what's one thing you'd like to improve. That's how easy evaluation can be. Two questions. And the third one always is there anything else that you want me to know? But, I mean, it's a typical classroom assessment technique that we use to give students feedback about their information. And it's very simple no matter what your skill level. You can ask your students what's the one thing you liked about it and the one thing you would change.
Yeah, I agree with the need to assess. This goes back to what I said earlier is publish, research,
absolutely.
Publish, get the word out there. I'm not speaking to all of you right now, but to some of you. You're doing this work. Don't be afraid to put it out there. There's enough foundational information out there now for you to scaffold on top of and to refer to. Do that. But my advice is to don't assess the tool, assess the outcome. Okay? If you were using a hammer and the nail, right. the nail didn't go in properly, you wouldn't say the hammer didn't work. You would say, I did something wrong or the nail maybe broke or something. Right. You wouldn't assess the hammer as a tool. Now, I mean, when I say that, there's a caveat to that, of course, because sometimes a tool, and the reason I say to assess the outcome and not the tool is because a tool can work, it can be structured to be used in one class, and it'll work completely different. The same teacher teaching the same class a semester later because it's a different set of students. So that's why you have to look at what is the learning outcome, what are you looking to accomplish, and is this the right tool for that?
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, satisfaction, whatever that means, is multidimensional when we're trying to measure it. So maybe a piece of that is ease of use, but that's really not the point, is to find out how easy it is to use Facebook. They're already using it. That's why we want to tap into that. And so we need to focus on the pedagogy and whether we're meeting our pedagogical needs or whatever our communication needs are for our unit or for us as a professional.
I mean, back a few years ago, you know, podcasts were all the rage when the iPod first came out. And we didn't sit down as an industry and say, let's go out there and make podcasts because they're cool and wonderful and it's a great way. No, we did it because the students were walking around with, you know, the iPods and they were already listening to them. So we said, oh, wait, this is another great way to reach the students. Well, you know, it's not even just the students anymore who are walking around with all of these, right? So it's a way to reach them. It's a way to get, and I think you were saying this earlier.
Yeah. Just talking about failed evaluation, remember we all ran out and thought podcasting was the way to go in 2007, or at least we did. And then we did all the podcasting and then we evaluated it. And you know what we found out? Nobody's podcast, like the students aren't getting the podcast. They just like rich media. So only 15% of our students, so the hundreds of students that participated, were actually using the mobile, you know, the whole reason of podcasting is pushed down in mobile. And it really had little to do with podcasting. What students liked is the fact that their faculty were motivated to use audio and video. And it really had little to do with the fact that there was a push down. Sorry, anybody who's working on those projects. Of course, these things are changing. That was 3 years ago, and so we can reapproach that. But with evaluation, you know, just to talk a little bit about open content and where we're moving, put it on your blog. I have tons of stuff on my blog, professorjustin.blogspot.com, the research I do. I don't have time, although maybe I'll be getting some grad students soon that do. I don't have time to publish and go through peer review and all that because what I'm doing on social media in a year and a half by the time it gets out in a journal in my discipline is useless. And so present at these conferences, put it on a blog, Twitter about your blog, come to the constituent group meeting for social media, put it on the listserv, get it out in the open and collaborate on these research projects. I'm more than willing to collaborate with anybody that wants to collaborate on research. So please reach out to us.
I agree that putting it out on the blog is important. But I also agree that it's important for us to publish in the journals that are accepted in our trade as the line at which things are considered acceptable. And that's why it's important not to necessarily evaluate the tool itself because, like you said, a year and a half, the tool's going to change, right? It wasn't that long ago that nobody knew what Twitter was. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I think it's, what, 4 years? You know, it's not, but it's the process that you're going through that needs to be looked at and published. But I agree 100%. Put it on your blog. Get the word out there. Tweet that your blog is there. Let people know. Let us know.
Yeah.
Us meaning us, not us. You can let us know if you want to.
All right. And so we wanted to wrap up the day. We have about 8 minutes left here. Is question number 10 is giving you guys an opportunity to ask a question. And so we'd like to have a volunteer, or if you'd like to Twitter it, that would be great, and then we'll read off. So who can Twitter your question the fastest?
Also,
Oh my God, you guys are awesome. 266.
Do we want to give them our Twitter?
It's on the last slide.
It's on the last slide. Awesome.
All right. You guys rock. All right. I'm not seeing any questions.
Okay, so I'm just going to keep going through.
More questions?
There's a microphone. No, they took the mic away.
Use the hashtag ELI. We'll have another social media constituent group meeting. There's also a constituent group meeting tomorrow afternoon at 4:30. Yes. Join the social media constituent group through EDUCAUSE so you can stay connected with us. And there's all of our Twitter contact information. So now we can take all of your questions.
Come on, I'm waiting.
Obviously, that's Tanya on the top, then me, and then Shannon or Sharon, whatever you want to call her.
Let's not say Sharon.
After five, we call her Sharon.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just kidding. That's your alter ego.
Or we could use the non-digital way and you could raise your hand.
That is not even fun.
Yes, in the back. It is, but here's the
it's
other thing, too. If you
it.
Ask the question and we answer it here, then the only people that hear it are in this room. If you ask the question through Twitter, everyone else may have that same question, too. So.
And it's...
I will say that this discussion is taking place on a lot of different listservs. So it's on the NMC listserv. It's with EDUCAUSE. It's with the social media constituent group. At Penn State, we don't have a social media policy. We do have social media guidelines. I will tell you that the social media guidelines we have are cake, and that anyone who uses social media looks at them and says, no kidding. You know, our social media guidelines are be real, be authentic, be open, be genuine. Don't pretend to be someone that you're not. It's really very basic things. We have shied away from, at least at this point, the policy aspect of it, knowing that there's no way you could ever enforce it. There really isn't. It's completely, in my opinion, pointless.
I agree that it belongs in acceptable use. We didn't sit down and say, how should we use VCRs? Is there an acceptable use? You know, should we come up with a VCR policy? Maybe we should come up with a book policy. And it all, you know, I think a behavior policy. I think you're absolutely right.
And I think it's the lack of control that is spurning the policy. It's very scary. It's
no,
very
because
scary for people.
That's it. It's fear. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in rhetoric, you know, that's the number way that you can get people motivated or whatever is fear. And it's because we don't understand it, and we can't quite conceptualize every single aspect of it. And I haven't published a paper on a model of social media yet or something like that, that we want to control it and so forth. But it's not going to be effective. It's not going to do what it does if we're controlling it. We can do our best to understand it, develop some best practices, and then let it do what it's going to do. It's like raising kids. You could try all you want to control it. It's just not going to quite work. Give it some good values and move it on its way and hope it moves out at 18.
Still have a question?
Oh, did I say that out loud?
Right here in the red. You know, how would you control it if a student wrote something mean in the bathroom about another student? You just can't.
Or passed notes that said.
Or they said something mean in the hallway. You kind of have to always take that perspective. Bullying is a very hot topic right now for obvious reasons.
Right.
But that has always been happening.
It's just a different way.
And how would you handle bullying if it were done face-to-face as opposed to social media? I think the right answer, if there is – well, I take that back. I think an answer is you approach it the same way you would if I said something mean to your face.
Yeah, absolutely.
The good thing about that, and you hit on this a second ago, if I say something mean to you right now, there's 180 or 200 people who are witnesses in the recording, of course, but if the recording weren't there. Yeah. But if I put it on the Internet – it's there.
And that's one of the things is we know bullying's always been going on. And we know that people can just be mean to people.
But
the
geeks.
Thing is
we
now
were bullied.
Is, what?
We're geeks. We were bullied.
Yeah. Now we can see it. It's there. There's a footprint about it. And so now it's right in front of us. We have a question in the back there.
Great question.
Yeah.
Great question.
Yeah, absolutely.
On our campus, we have a division that focuses specifically on that, and we've made sure that they are on our academic computing committee and also on other important committees so that when this question comes up, that they're constantly raising that. I think there are technologies that are assisting in reading screens and so on. I don't know that as an industry it's been addressed very well. That's an excellent question.
Yeah, I think that's a bigger key is it's up to us to push the industry to make those sorts of things accessible. It's great now with YouTube that there's captioning options and so forth. And so on our campus, we sort of have best practices with rich media developments in regards to social media and making sure that it's accessible.
Yeah, I had an interesting conversation at the Apple store about 4 days ago because my old iPhone died and I needed to replace it. And the young man who was helping me was probably 20 years old. And we were talking about attitudes towards openness between his generation and my own. And I think that
absolutely
plays some part of it. I don't think and we should probably model good behavior. I'm not saying we shouldn't, but I think attitudes towards privacy are a little bit different.
Yeah.
If there's a conversation that needs to take place that needs to not be made public, don't have it in a social media. Have it in your course management system where it's protected.
And that's the thing is figuring out the difference between what information needs to be public and what can be private, and figuring out those paradigms.
I think it's important what you've just said, and that is for those of you who came here who are using social media already and you wanted to hear the conversation, and for those of you who are learning, I think the important thing about this is that we need to model good behavior, all right? Instead of telling people don't do this, don't do it. Just if you think that posting about X is inappropriate, don't post about it. If you think that it, you know, so I think we need to be the models upon which we teach other people, like your friend. And you did the right thing. You said to him, listen, I'm reading this. The lawyer is probably reading it too. So maybe you shouldn't do that. That was a great service that you did for that person. I think we need to take more opportunities to be able to say that.
I think also, too, I don't want everyone to come out here and think that you should keep everything private as well.
Right.
I've actually really opened up on Twitter, and now I've built connections because I do share things about my personal life and so forth, which has helped me enhance my professional connections. You know, I grew up very much like, this is very professional, all your communication is professional, this is private. And lately, Twitter has helped me come out of that shell in the last year, and Facebook, and I now have stronger professional ties than I've ever had before, because, you know, I share pictures with Amy of the little one, you know, because I've seen Arturo's newborn pictures of them and got to track what happened in the delivery room because I love Shannon's Bakery. And it makes me very hungry every time.
Hungry all the time.
I just don't want you to come away with the idea, don't share. Well, share appropriately.
Absolutely. I mean, the three of us know each other.
There is that darn word again.
The three of us know each other because of a social, we know each other through Second Life, which is a platform, not necessarily, and we can have this debate whether it's a social media, whether it's a platform, that's a completely different issue, but that's how we know each other. This is a professional relationship that's been going on for several years now, and a very productive one that formed from that, because at one point or another, one of us was willing to talk to the other about something and to be able to put it out there.
All right. And I just wanted to talk about do we have any more questions? The prizes, we actually have over 400 tweets this session. Yeah. One of the things we're getting about tweeting this is documenting this. Not just for the people who aren't here, but it's documenting it for all of you. So when you leave here, you can look at everyone's notes in this room and all of the ideas that were shared, and you can take this document, this microblog that we've just created under this hashtag, EDU Social Media, back to your campuses to make the arguments that you need to make. Because people are going to think that you're lying when you tell them things like, be open and share and so forth.
Sharing the videos that we made yesterday in the pre-conference seminar, different perspectives from so many different campuses, from so many different countries, are really, really powerful. So don't forget the YouTube videos as well.
For those of you who may have come here because you're less familiar with social media, you go to search.twitter.com. It's one avenue through which you can, and then you put in a hashtag is the pound sign. So you put in the hashtag that they've given you, EDU social media, and we'll come up with a list. You should do that fairly soon, because Twitter only saves that for, I think, what, 3 days?
There's a Twapper Keeper.
Okay.
Yeah, you can use other tools like Twapper Keeper or whatever that will archive this information for you as well to keep a record of it. But with that, I wanted to say I have no idea who was the most tweeted person today, because my methodology was to throw the text into a Wordle and see what were the big popular usernames, and that's not going to happen with 400+. So we have 7 T-shirts left. So if you want a T-shirt, come on up and get one after the session here.
All right, this is the point where I step away from the podium.
Yeah, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Oh, tweet up. We have an EDUCAUSE tweet up today.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts. Or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.